This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, standalones and series, the pros and cons of one-offs versus the never-ending series.
So I think it's safe to say, Jules, we've definitely both read books which have been standalones, which we've desperately wanted to see more of. And yeah. We've also both read series where after a certain point you're like, oh my God, please end.
Or where you're even screaming, just let them be together.
Or just let them die.
Yeah. Stop the bringing them back from the dead.
Yeah, the whole of Supernatural fandom at this point. Just let them rest. I think it's something that we're all familiar with, where we can, I think most people can probably name a single book they definitely wanted to see more of, and a series which really should have ended in its prime. So, do you have any particular examples you'd like to sort of hit this episode off with?
Okay, well, I've got a couple of standalones that I really, really enjoyed and I would really have quite liked a bit more. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Heart's Blood, which is by Juliette Merrillier, and it's just a one-off book on its own. She normally writes a trilogy or a series or even a duology, mm-hmm. but it's the only one for that. And that doesn't mean that it's precluded that she might write something for there in future, but it's very clearly a book that stands on its own.
Yeah.
And it's just a really nice sort of Celtic retelling of Beauty and the Beast, but with lots of ghosts and things as well. But I got to the end of it and it was like, that was so good, I just want to read it again from the beginning. It's like, why isn't there another book? So that sort of feeling. And the same with Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Even though that is a massive, massive book of over 1,000 pages, I would have happily read another book.
Well, there is actually a sequel in the making, isn't there?
I'm not sure if she's writing one or not, but at the moment, published, it's just a standalone. I mean, there was the short story Ladies of Grace Adieu.
Yeah, but I think there is actually a sequel happening that she's writing at the moment, because it's going to inform the next series.
For the purposes of it being published, it is a standalone and has been a standalone for quite some time, because it came out when I was about 18, so a while ago. Yeah. So it's a long time between books.
Yeah. You're going to give George R.R. Martin ideas. I think of another one. Howl's Moving Castle. That's a standalone. Did I imagine that?
There was Castle in the Air and The House of Many Ways, which both featured Howl as well.
Oh, there you go. So I learn something new every day.
But they're not quite a series, because Diana Wynne Jones doesn't really write series. She writes companion books, or books that look at another set of characters. And it has to be said that although they appeared in those two books, they weren't, in my opinion, they weren't as good as Howl's Moving Castle. It was just a case of, by popular demand, Howl had made a cameo and so had Sophie, kind of thing.
Ah, well, in which case it's a little bit like, it's not actually a series then, it's just all set in the same universe.
Yeah, I mean, some people consider them a series because of the theme, and you know, you do have the house that, you know, opens on four different dimensions at once. But I don't know, I can see why some people call it a series, but in other ways it's also sort of not.
And what about series that just need to end now?
Series that just need to end, probably The Sword of Truth. Technically that series has ended, and yet he's still writing books. And it's like, but this was supposed to end with Confessor, and you've written another three books. So, yes, there's that. Wheel of Time, which I think has now ended, but at 14 big books.
Wait, Wheel of Time has actually managed to end? Well done.
Well, I think so. I could be wrong, because I have to say, I got to about book five, and I was just like, I can't be doing with this.
My general understanding of Wheel of Time is that it moved so slowly that, you know, at the end of book one, they've just finished breakfast, so...
I think they'd done, like, a couple of miles by that point, I'm not sure.
Even I can walk miles quicker than that.
So, yeah. And it's not that there aren't good bits in it, it's just a case of... Okay, my particular irritation with the Sword of Truth series was the fact that he'd have books that were set completely around a different set of characters. Mm. But they did advance the main overarch of the story slightly, and then you had to kind of read it to get to the part where you got the essential bit of information for the next book.
Yeah.
Which would bring in the main characters, and it was usually the last three or four chapters. but you couldn't say exactly where it was going to be. So it was incredibly frustrating. And it was just a case of you're not actually moving the main arc on. And I suppose that's the thing, because you can have some series that, you know, I didn't realise Harry Dresden had 15 books in that series.
Oh, sorry. Should have warned you.
But to be fair, I mean, well, I haven't even finished the first book yet, but well, you can see that there's going to be overarching themes there. I think each book sort of does stand on its own as well.
Each book can definitely, I think you can definitely comfortably read pretty much most of the books on their own. You could come into the series pretty much anywhere and still be able to vaguely follow what was coming along, because they're quite self-contained. You probably wouldn't enjoy it as much. The books are quite easy to read, especially the early ones. You know, you can get through them relatively quickly. But in the case of Harry Dresden, because it's more along the lines of kind of, well, you know, by nature, it's a little bit like the Sherlock Holmes books, in that there's an element of reset at the end of every kind of book. And I don't actually mean that nothing, you know, the characters don't progress or anything like that, but the overarching plot is much wider and bigger, and actually there's more than one overarching plot. There's several kind of themes that are introduced over time, different enemies, different people who come back, it gets steadily a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
But it's a very wide universe with a lot of characters, which he Jim Butcher is very good at it. He's introduces these characters over a long period of time and lets us sort of get to know them over that period of time, which is why actually the series works so well. And even though it is 15 books, it's still maintained interest. Though you do get to a point where you start to say, well, you need to start upping and changing things a little bit now, because we're getting used to a certain formula. So what can you do to change it? What can you do to add that new element, which is still going to give us the nostalgic feeling we want? You know, we want it to be a Harry Dresden story, but what can you add to it to make it, to renovate it?
Yeah, and I think that's the point, isn't it? Because when you have authors who start recycling characters under different names and not creating new characters, and that's when it starts to get stale. And yeah. Situations as well.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, it's difficult to do. It's difficult to do, and it's difficult to know what people want, because some people will say, some people only ever want, they just want the same story over and over again. They want that comfortable thing. And it's about finding the balance of keeping true to what you set out to do. And also trying to do something a little bit dangerous and experimental. And I think, you get it especially more than with books, with TV series. You get these TV series where they finally achieve, like normally about season 5, they finally achieve what they set out to do. So, you know, Castle and Beckett finally get together. Supernatural was it was the first 5 seasons, though that was the story arc that was planned.
Yeah.
You know, and they kind of they establish and they set out what they wanted to do. And then after that, they're kind of running with it a little bit. They're a little bit sort of like, oh, okay, we've got to find something else to fill the spot now. And I think a large amount of it comes from the fact that, and I've mentioned this before, you know, I've mentioned my writing technique, which is that when you approach a character within the story, they have 3 motivations: the innocent, the selfish, and the righteous motivation. And what happens is that writers plan the 5 series, and they decide what's going to happen in that series and how these characters are going to develop in that series, and they do it, and then they get to the end and they're like, okay, how now, having them gone through all of that growth and stuff, like, do we progress? And the ones who succeed in that are the ones who understand, who basically set a new kind of challenge, a new kind of something new that they're going to have to come to terms with, because no one's perfect at the end. You know, even if you've sort of bettered yourself, no one is perfect, you know, and the things that have happened to you will mark you and change you and develop you. And where Harry Dresden again works is the fact that Harry in book 15 is not the same Harry in book 1. He's enough the same character that you could, you know, you still know who he is, but he's definitely more battered, and he's more changed, and he's more mature, and he's a little bit darker in some ways too. And I think the problem is when they go, okay, and then they make them have to face the same kind of development. It's a little bit like Iron Man in all of the movies. End of the movie, he kind of learns a little bit of sort of self-control and love and appreciation for himself. And then the start of the next movie, it's like, no, I think the worst of myself again. And obviously if you're battling with depression and stuff like that, you have your ups and downs and stuff like that. But it's like they completely ignore all of the character development he went through in the previous movie.
And that is the balance, isn't it, with a series, is to, as you say, keep the character recognizable but still allow them to develop. It's like the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter series, which is by Laurel K. Hamilton, and that's another one that I've sort of abandoned way before. I mean, it's still going, but way before it got anywhere near sort of book 16 or whatever. In fact, I think it might be in its 20s now. And that's again because it. She, not just because she was increasingly using erotica to basically keep the books sort of going with some sort of tension, but the character just stopped changing.
I think the most annoying trope for me is when you get a series where you have a villain who goes through a redemption arc, right? And sort of becomes one of the good guys and then goes back to being a villain again because they need something. So they're like, oh, and now we're going to trigger something that's just going to make them go back to being a villain. Then they have another redemption arc. Then they go back to being a villain again. You're like, just, and I'm not pointing any fingers or anything, but Evil Queen and Rumpelstiltskin and Once Upon a Time, like, just let them stay on whatever side they are. The whole thing, I loved Rumpelstiltskin and Once Upon a Time when I was first introduced to him because he wasn't bad necessarily, but he was very self-serving and he was quite amoralistic. He did what he wanted to do, but he definitely wasn't bad. He was on a different kind of plane. And then they sort of, I don't know what they did with him. The actor is fantastic, so don't get me wrong, and the series is good. But it got a little bit contrived because they brought him down to a level which just sort of made it lose interest, where actually I think it would have been kind of more fun if, yeah, he'd developed a little bit, but if he'd kind of stayed a little bit more indifferent, not evil, but just indifferent to sort of, well, I can help you and I'll help you. It depends who's going to pay me the most. It's not personal. It's about what's going to serve me and my needs, you know?
Yeah, I think that's actually where they went right with Crowley and Supernatural.
Yes. And yeah, ultimately, Crowley's going through this whole phase at the moment where he's got a bit of a love thing for Dean.
Mean, bear in mind that I haven't seen the last season and a half, so I could be like talking out of my hat, but right up until that point, I don't know what it is, because Supernatural does kind of recycle some of the same ideas over and over again, but the characters do change just a little bit, just enough.
Yeah.
And I think because you sort of love them so much that you can keep watching it, even though you're kind of rolling your eyes going, okay, you're back from the dead again.
Well, I think the problem with Supernatural is that they've gotten to a stage where the development is more along the lines of Sam and Dean interchange having doubts about being hunters, which is that Sam obviously was the original doubter. Dean was all like, yeah, hunting, hunting, hunting. It's what we do, family business. And Sam's like, well, I want to be a lawyer. Then Jessica died, and Sam was there like, hunting, 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 hunting. And so they were both going, hunting, hunting, hunting for a while. And then Dean was there like, oh, maybe I kind of want to start a family. And Sam was like, no, hunting. And then kind of Dean died, and Sam sort of was a bit, oh, okay, well, we'll kind of take a step back. And Dean was there like, no, we've got to get into hunting. And that's ex that it's just it exchange it exchanges. And in the most recent one, you've got Dean back saying, oh yeah, hunting, this is what we're gonna do, this is how we're gonna die. And Sam's there like, well, I'm like, guys, stick to it. Decide, do you want to keep hunting or not? But that's always the dynamic. At no point ever do both of them go, actually, we could probably quit hunting. Because, of course, if both of them did that, they would just quit hunting and that would be the end of the
Oh,
series.
yeah. I mean, the thing that I think bugged me was every series, without fail, one, if not both of them, at some point will completely fall out with the other one over some big betrayal, and then it will get forgotten by the next series.
And then, yeah, it was. They'll do something and then Dean will be like, no, I've always cared about you. Nothing you could do could ever make me turn against you. And I'm like, And
Yeah, didn't see the previous Lemon series, you know.
it's also they have these very sort of dramatic kind of breakups and then get back together again. And on one level, that's kind of realistic because I think they capture the fact that sometimes the present just seems so dramatic, and then in retrospect, everything is kind of a little bit, well, actually, it doesn't really matter. So in that respect, yeah, but in another respect, I think, I still watch Supernatural, and I think some of the episodes still are fantastic. In the latest series, they've added a new dynamic, which is quite nice. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but they've added a new dynamic, which is very interesting. But yeah, one thing I think that they've sort of failed with Supernatural is that in order to make it interesting, because they can't just have bigger and bigger threats, they've just made Sam and Dean really bad hunters now. Like,
Yeah.
they just get knocked over. Like, I swear most of the time they defeat monsters, it's via sheer luck, really, and timing. Whereas, they used to be good at this job.
It is a bit sort of like, well, we can see that they haven't, that the monsters haven't actually got worse, so what, where are you, where's your game, guys?
Guys, you used to be good at this.
Maybe that career change might be an idea.
Yeah.
You know, if you hadn't made enemies in both camps and they kind of all want you dead now.
Yeah, literally everybody wants them dead. But yeah, it's there is an element of, guys, come on, you used to actually be good at this, so could you get back to being good at it instead of literally having to be saved last by Deus Ex Machina? So yeah, I think that's an element where the series has failed, and it's failed because what they did was they couldn't just have the monsters getting stronger and stronger, because that's again another time when series start to get very boring, where it's just, well, you defeated that monster, but it's nothing in comparison to this monster, and all the nature of the monster is never differs. So in Supernatural, what they said was, no, okay, the nature of the monster does differ, it's just that they're kind of on the same level, and so we've got to bring Sam and Dean down a little bit. Some people might argue with me on that, so I'm open to anyone arguing against it, because I guess in some levels it does get more apocalyptic every time Sam and Dean rear their head, they tend to unleash like terrible things on the earth, so they really should be stopped.
Yeah, it has got to the point where they are the biggest dangers, probably.
They seriously are.
So
Like,
it's like,
guys.
maybe if you two stopped like talking to everybody else and, you know, doing what you're doing.
Well, maybe if you guys stopped picking fights with things that you should just leave it alone. Just leave it alone. But yeah, so there's that. But then you've got the whole Dragon Ball Z thing, and we've talked about this before, but the whole sort of the big boss that just gets progressively stronger. So they're like, aha, you've defeated Frieza. Frieza is nothing in comparison to me. And it goes on and on and on. And like, it's not that they ever have to sort of really change how they fight or how they approach the enemy. They just have to sort of get stronger every time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where you, instead of a series, something like a trilogy or a quartet can work, because it's basically it's the three Billy Goats Gruff, where you have the troll under the bridge that won't let the first goat cross, so a bigger goat comes along and that one can't get over, and then finally the big Billy Goats Gruff comes across and tosses the troll out into the river. And effectively, it's that idea, the power of disaster, whereby you can scale up probably three times quite comfortably, as long as you don't start with the world is ending in book one.
And having the scale up, but at the same time, and yeah, that works if you have a trilogy and you have the scale up, but it kind of helps if there's an element of the scale up isn't just the scale up, you're introduced actually to a concept of the main threat in the first quite early on. And you kind of, I mean, like Lord of the Rings, okay, they're introduced to the threat very early on, which is it's just this could happen. We need to be, they know about Sauron, they know about it, they know about the dangers and stuff like that. They don't realize they're going to have to face it yet, but their experiences then throughout the books put them in the right standing to be able to defeat Sauron. Whereas if they tried to face Sauron in the first book, well, they would have all died, so, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, isn't it? Because they need all those sort of side quests and everything to sort of harden off enough to be able to get through Mordor.
Yeah, basically, and to sort of become the kind of people who could do it. So in that sense, it works. It's more along the lines of when you sort of create the big bad boss and sort of it's defeated and you leave it at that. I like having that foreshadowing at the beginning. I like having that there's something bigger and we kind of, how are we going to get to it sort of thing. I mean, you don't have to. But the other thing you can do is actually say, yeah, there's something bigger, but if you think about the challenges they face, they're not all the same. They have to face different kind of things and they have to approach them in different sort of ways. It's not all just beat it with a stick and then beat it a little bit harder with a stick and then beat it one more time, even harder with a stick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I was thinking of the Deptford Mice trilogy by Robin Jarvis. And as I've mentioned Robin Jarvis before, he writes things that look deceptively innocent. They're actually really utterly horrible. the Deptford Mice trilogy, the original one, The Dark Portal, The Crystal Prison, The Final Reckoning. In The Dark Portal, you have these mice who live in Deptford, strangely enough. And there is a threat that it will actually threaten all of London. And it's this monstrous cat that's been alive for about 400 years that can do magic. And it hates London, and it's basically turning the Black Death into this demonic entity that is going to wipe out life, because this cat is so twisted now, it just wants to destroy everything. And one of the mice, she stops the cat, but they don't quite manage to get rid of it fully, and of course the cat's spirit is hanging around, and in the second book, the cat's spirit is sort of caught in this crystal ball, and nobody knows that that's what's happened to it. And it is a complete failure on the part of this mouse again, because she wants to do her own thing. She doesn't want any part of this. She's already faced the cat, Jupiter, and defeated it. And there's all sorts of weird stuff going along. And, you know, because she refuses to listen to anybody else, she's quite headstrong. That causes the creature to be released at the end of that book. And then it really comes back with a vengeance in the third book in a really quite horrible way. It brings on what is essentially going to be an eternal winter and everybody is dying again. But it's a scale up done in a way that is actually, you can get on board with it. And it is the same bad guy each time.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess in that sense, the scale up was probably, it was probably planned to a certain degree. Yeah. I think more often than not, again, we find that problem of bad scaling up, and it's just the bigger boss, usually when a series wasn't actually planned to be as long as it turned out to be.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people have found issue with the second and third book of The Hunger Games.
Less because than Divergent, but yeah, carry on.
Well, I mean, like, the books of the second Hunger Games and the third Hunger Games weren't planned. The first book was written as a standalone, and it was good. And then the second, and it was so popular that the second and the third were commissioned. And I think that's also a case of why actually the series, the film series works better than the books, possibly because it translates better to screen, but because when they decided to approach the film series, they were approaching it as a trilogy. They weren't approaching it as a single film and then two more. They came at it from the viewpoint that it was going to be a trilogy. So they added more of those themes of the kind of the bigger rebellion earlier on.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I do think she did a much better job of doing follow-up books, and they're not actually that out of sequence. The pace slows down in the second book, but I think it has to because of it becoming much larger. And maybe if that had been planned right at the beginning of the first book, then yeah, maybe it would have worked slightly better, but I do still think it works. Whereas with Divergent, the first book's pretty good and it's quite gritty, and then you get to the second book and you're like, okay, this isn't quite as good as the first one. It definitely sags, but you think, that's okay, by the third book it'll really pick up. No. No, it goes completely to pot. That's the one with the really, really contrived ending where she kills off the main character.
I remember, yeah.
And I think that's sort of reflected in the films as well, because they actually did a reasonably good job of rescuing Insurgent with the film and made it a much more dynamic story. And then with Allegiant, they decided, let's divide it into two films, possibly as a money spinner, who knows. And the fourth film is now going straight to TV.
Are you serious?
Yep.
That's me. Actually, to be honest, I didn't realize that the second film had even come out.
So, yeah, they just don't work. I mean, it wasn't a bad idea. When you look at the series overall, it's sort of, this is kind of preposterous. You're only allowed one quality, and we're going to divide you based on the quality that you have in the most profusion.
Yeah.
And then going from there, it's like, okay, well, you've got us to accept that in the first book. And then in the second book, we're thinking, this seems really silly. And by the third book, we're like, okay, this is just beyond silly now.
Yeah.
And it really, the fact that there isn't enough planning, the fact that the scaffolding is still there and it would all fall down without it really shows, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a reason why, trilogies are popular, and it's because you can really put that rule of three into a trilogy, can't you?
Yeah.
And there are also series where actually the second books and so forth are actually better. The series gets better as it goes on.
Yeah, totally agree.
Harry Potter is just one small example. I mean, the first book is charming, but the thing that made Harry Potter successful was that it grew with its audience.
Yeah, but then again, she planned all seven books from the beginning and she knew how it was going to end. She wrote the last scene
Yeah.
first, so.
But the thing is that she planned all seven books at the end, but if you think about it, the thing that they're facing, it's consistently the same enemy.
Yes.
And she still managed to make that interesting. Because the way they have to face it, the way they, in fact, the only book where Voldemort isn't, Harry doesn't have to face Voldemort, is the third one.
Yeah, and you could argue that they are facing an aspect of Voldemort that's so much worse because it's the aspect of him that makes people selfish and scared and act in their own interests. So,
Yeah. And yet, despite the fact that there's six books consistently about Voldemort where they face against him in the end, they're all different. And it was because, again, the challenges that they face and the way that they face him are always different.
yeah, I mean, I. Obviously, it really works with the Harry Potter books, but yeah, middle book syndrome is a thing, unfortunately, and part of that is the fact that book two is really, really hard to write after book one. In fact, book two is just really hard to write, full stop, usually, because it's if you've had a reasonable run at book one, then it's you can almost get yourself tied up into knots trying to improve on it.
Yeah.
That is part of it.
Yeah. Well, this is a thing because I mean for me it was to a lesser extent because The Sons of Thestian started out as just a single book, and then I didn't know how it was going to end, and then flash, it came to me, and I suddenly realized how I had to write a second book. But actually, more than that, I Belong to the Earth was a standalone, wasn't it?
Yes, originally it was decided to
And you know you and now it's a series of four books, the Unveiled series,
Yeah.
and I would very much argue that your second book is even better than your first.
Yeah, I mean, just from a logical standpoint, in my opinion, I think it's better as well. I think the writing's better. I think you kind of need the first book to establish the characters, but I do make it a bit. I suppose I do sort of level up the boss a bit, if you like, the second
Yeah.
book. But hopefully not to the extent where the third book's not going to work.
Well, I think the way you do it is that it's not actually necessarily about something being more powerful than Emily. It's about her facing different challenges, which actually more than make her develop as a person. I mean, the first book is really about her coming to terms with who she is and what she has and sort of pulling, picking the pieces up,
Yeah.
repairing herself. And the second book, there's an overconfidence about, I don't want to spoil too much, but in the second book, there's a slight overconfidence about her. She's feeling a lot better than she was. She's come to terms with what she can do, and she's actually, really sort of getting involved in it. And it was a little bit like when you get to the end of primary school and you're
Yeah.
the adult and you're like, yeah, I know all the stuff, and then of course you go to the next school and suddenly you're the You're the baby
You're a little
again.
fish in a big pond again, aren't you?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what happens. And then we see her getting something else gets taken away from her in a different way. And so I think the reason that the Unveiled series works so far, and of the little snippets I've managed to nick for book three, ha ha ha, it works because we are growing with Emmeline. Whereas it's not the A to B kind of progression for her. You've come at her from a very human angle. So she didn't just finish developing in the first at the end of the first book. It was just the start of her repairing herself and becoming an adult. And that's the journey we're going through with her, and you've done it very subtly. And again, I think that's one of the main reason it works. It's all about how you develop the character and how you continue to develop the character.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, and I'm glad you think I've done it right. But no, I agree with the idea, and that is certainly what I was aiming for. And I think ultimately that all the external enemies and difficulties and the supernatural forces ultimately are just a reflection of what she's actually going through internally. So the real enemy all the way through is herself.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
But ultimately, isn't that, the same for all of us in life, whether we're hounded by supernatural forces or not?
Well, yeah, I think that my favorite stories are very often where the external kind of conflict is absolutely a parallel of the internal conflict. And that's why it works, basically.
But having said that, I did have book two blues. Seriously, I got so stuck, and it was the first third of the book, and I just got to a point and I was like, I can't go forward, I have to go back and start again. And I think I must have done that three times,
Wow.
and it was really, really hard, just getting it all right. I had all this collection of ideas that I wanted, and when you think that I wrote book one in 3.5 weeks, the first draft,
Oh, you're so annoying.
I did edit it a lot after that. But and then with book two, it took me 1.5 years to write, because I did get stuck. And I think the thing was, I approached it thinking I could sort of dash off another book, as it were, or at least dash off another first draft. And no two books when you write them are the same.
Yeah.
And I suppose perhaps I could have gone in and been a bit lazy and thought, well, this will do, and sort of thrown it out there, but I just wasn't happy with it. So,
No.
I mean, I think it was worth it in the end, but it was a real headache.
Oh, I think the stakes got bigger as well.
Yeah.
Well, it was a success as far as I was concerned. So
It hasn't been released yet.
that was I've read it and I'm reading it again. But no, I think that marks a case of a first book which was originally just a standalone. But has actually translated well into a series. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next with Emmeline.
Me too. The
Don't say
series
that,
is.
you know.
I do have a rough idea, in fairness, but they do surprise me, and they do when you write them. The characters do surprise you. You have to set them free enough to go in their own direction a little bit. Otherwise, it just, they don't seem like they're acting like themselves. But yes, I do have a rough idea how it's all going to end up. I'm just trying not to give that away. But
So yeah.
I know a lot of other authors have said they have real difficulty with book two, and it is very specifically book two, having written the first one and got somewhere with it. When they then go and try to write the second book, they find it really difficult to get going.
Well, because it is the link, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
And
the link.
it seems to be the book where you suffer the most paralysing self-doubt as well. I mean, there are other books in the future, if you keep writing, that do hit you, but book two is very particularly sort of, can I perform as well again?
Yeah. Can I write something which isn't going to be the same as
Well,
I've done
yeah. I
before?
mean, all the way through, I was thinking, am I just recycling the same storyline? I don't think I am, but what if I am? So, yeah, that was the big sort of paralyzing one for me. But I think that's where middle book syndrome comes from for books that get published, and you think, okay, the second book's a bit of a dip, and then it may go up or down in the third book, where the second book just doesn't seem to fit as well. Of course, another way of approaching trilogies is you have you set it in the same world, and you have some of the same characters, but the main characters for the second book and the third book are actually different sets. So you might move the generations along. So if you take the original, I know you don't really like these books that much, but the original Seven Waters trilogy.
I was going to say, you're going to talk about Seven Waters, and I'm going to stamp my foot and say, don't like it.
But you've got one set of characters in the first book, and they are mentioned, they are in the second book, and they're mentioned again in the third book. But you move on, it's shows, it's three generations. And then if you carry on through the series, it's looking at some of the, it's looking at fourth generation as well. It works, I think, because they haven't just tried to stay with the same characters. Because if you're going to have a book that sort of stands alone, unless you've got a really carefully plotted arc where you don't let everything be tied up in the first book, then yeah, it's not going to work when you go into a second book or a third book, I think.
Yeah. Another case of when series works is when actually your main character, you know, the consistent character, has the long haul develop, and or actually really rather stays the same. And everyone and all the people they interact with are the ones who go through the motions and develop. So you get the, you know, you get the story through that, but the main character remains the same. And you get that obviously a lot with detective stories. You know, you think of Hercule Poirot.
Yes.
And Hastings. They don't exactly differ. I mean, Hastings goes off and does different stuff, but, you know, Poirot doesn't exactly change. And again, Sherlock Holmes is not a character who really changed. You know, he has a change over the long haul, and that he seems to become a little bit more human and a little bit, you know, nicer and stuff like that over time and over the books. But for the most part, he doesn't change. And for the most part, Hercule Poirot doesn't change either. And all of the sort of actually the human aspect and the development and stuff like that is from the people he meets and the people he interacts with around him.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. If you're not going to have a character that develops in and of themselves, then you have to have relationships with other characters which do change and either deepen or grow apart.
Yeah.
So that's where the change happens.
Or have your main character almost as a kind of an observer, basically.
Yeah.
Which is what I think, which is what a lot of detectives kind of end up being. They are the observers on the outside. But they themselves tend to just be the same. They just don't change. Things don't change for them.
Yeah, there's something almost a bit tragic about that in a way.
Yeah, it is tragic. And I think kind of people sometimes stick with the series because they want to see that change. And I think successful sort of detective series is when it kind of starts to change over time. But I mean, another example, House as a series, you know, with Hugh Laurie in it. I fell out of love a little bit with House because it got a little bit stupid.
Yeah.
And originally I quite liked it because House himself didn't really change for the first few series. He was the observer character. And occasionally, you know, you'd have centric episodes around him. But his development was slow. And then it got a little bit more personal. And then he started doing stuff that he really shouldn't have been getting away with. And people kept forgiving him, ultimately. That kind of irked me a little bit. But it's about finding that balance where you allow the main character to be the observer so that you don't get, observer so that the series can go on for longer. But then you also allow the main character to develop a certain amount so that the audience just don't just get bored. Because you will also get bored if you only have an observer all the time.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think that's more the case with TV series than it is with books.
Probably, yeah, because if you have an observer character in a book, then it's not the same as not having any characterization at all, but usually the characterization is a little bit looser, so you can look through that character's eyes. So you have you as the reader being the main character almost.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess it's about finding that balance, and I think ultimately not everyone is going to be happy. There's no way to do it. You know, and it's that joke that that they did in The Big Bang Theory where they said, you know, there's two ways to end a series. One where they end it in its prime, like Firefly, or another where they just gradually reduce the quality of the series. scary so that no one really minds when it ends.
Yeah,
You
no,
know?
I can agree with that. But in my opinion, Firefly was cut down in its prime.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It was cut down in its prime.
I think they ended Buffy at the right time.
Yeah.
And I think they ended it on a high note, whereas Angel probably had another season in it.
Yeah. Sometimes a series is, yeah. It's about saying, I think, you know, there's an element of money making that comes into it at a certain point and say, actually, is this about telling the story anymore, or is this just about being gratuitous? And it makes me think, Merlin, the series, BBC Merlin, I kind of accepted that they cut it off at 5 seasons. I reckon they could have had one more season if they changed the way they did it a little bit. And one thing I'm a little bit disappointed in is that it would have actually been nice to have a season which explored the dynamic of Merlin revealing his magic.
Yeah.
So that it didn't just happen at the end of the you know, in the finale, he explains he has magic and kind of Arthur goes through all the motions of it within a few minutes, which is kind of a bit of a shame. And they did it nicely, don't get me wrong, but it would have been kind of nice if actually what had happened was if at the end of a series Merlin's magic was revealed and the next series was about sort of him starting off being hunted and then sort of the acceptance and then the difficulty of kind of trying to get that into society and how that works, whether people still trust him, whether some people don't, how the dynamic shifts, you know, an element of Arthur probably trying to make everything back to normal and pretend none of it has happened and Merlin not being able to do that anymore, or, you know, things like that. It would have been an interesting dynamic, which would have, I think, would have made an excellent final series.
Yeah.
And also they had these amazing knights and we got to see very little of their pasts and stuff like that. Like Percival never even explained where he came from. Not really. And Gawain mentions he has a sister at one point. Like, we should have met her. Gawain's whole story should have come out at some point. Lancelot should have had way more episodes and been more than just the cannon fodder who got brought back to life just to die again after making Gwen betray Arthur. You know, there was... I loved the series, and I think they could have had another season in them if they had expanded on some of those stories. But I kind of respect their decision to end it, because it did end on a high. You know, it yeah. still ended with everyone going, gosh, we love it.
And I think if you can pull that off where you end something where everyone goes, oh, I wish there was more, but, you know, we are kind of almost satisfied with what we've got, that's the best thing. If you can do that with a book series as well, that's also brilliant. I mean, I have to say, did you ever read the True Blood series, the Charlene Harris books, Sookie Stackhouse?
Ah, Sookie. I watched some of the first few episodes of the series, but I couldn't get into it.
Yeah, the series is all right, although it got absolutely preposterous at one point. It just turned into a, yes, and we're 2 minutes in, so everyone's clothes come off with the TV.
Well, as far as I was concerned, actually, like, the best bit about the series was the opening sequence.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was very artful. Anyway, sorry.
But the books are actually quite good. I mean, it's urban fantasy with vampires, and it's quite funny, and Suki is less likely to just jump into bed with everybody for a start, which, you know, is good. But, you know, there's character development and there's things that happen and, it, you know, it's not too corny, but they're nice and light to read. And then you get to the last three books and you can tell that the author is so bored of this series by that point. It comes out in the writing really badly and you keep reading them because you've read all the others and you just hope it's going to pick up. And I still haven't read the last book, but apparently it's just really disappointing. It's absolutely, I've heard from a few other people who are fans, and it just falls completely flat. And it's a case of, no, I want to wrap this up. I want it over with, and I've been contracted to write this many books, and now it's got to be over. And, you know, that's kind of a crappy thing to do to your audience.
Yeah. But then again, is there pressure for her to continue the series?
Well, there is, but I think at some point, you as the author have the responsibility to say, I don't have this in me right now, so either I don't write it now or I don't write it.
Well, I think it's a little bit different, but I did an author talk a while ago and I was doing a Q&A and it was going on, but people kept asking questions and I didn't know when to stop it. And at the end, my dad came over to me and he said, "You have to, you are the one who has to stop it because people will just keep going on.
Yeah.
People will always keep going on. So you have to be the one who decides when to stop." And in the same respect, the author has to be the one to decide when a series ends, because people, you know, we complain about Supernatural, but we're still watching it.
The thing is,
Still enjoying it.
I don't feel that the actors or even the screenwriters are actually bored of it yet. I mean, they are recycling a few things, but at the same time, it feels like they're all still having fun, so therefore the
Yeah.
audience is having fun.
I agree with that, is that you can tell, especially in a series, when the actors are getting bored with it. No, in the case of Supernatural, that you can see that the actors are actually still really enjoying themselves, and their dynamic on and off screen is obvious, and it's actually, you know, I think that's why Supernatural is still enjoyable.
Yeah, and they obviously get involved with their fans, and there's a huge fan base.
Yeah.
And they even read and laugh and enjoy some of the fanfic, as I understand it.
Yeah, so, you know,
It's like, well, okay, you've really set up not just a franchise there, but almost something like a huge extended family.
But then you've got to sort of ask yourself, is the success of Supernatural continuing on really then is more about the actors?
I think it's sort of a combination, everybody still having fun in that universe, including the audience. So
Yeah.
that's where the success comes from. Because even I've got a lot of affection for it, and I'm looking at it and thinking, you've done this storyline before, but oh, this is kind of cool. Let's just watch it.
I'll accept. I'm just waiting for Sam's powers to come back. That's what I really want.
Yeah.
Because that, again, would add an interesting dynamic about whether Dean would be funny about it still anymore, considering what Dean's been up to, you know. So, be interesting to
Okay,
see.
one thing I would like to talk about before we sign off the day
Yep.
is the romantic subplot in a series or a trilogy or whatever,
Yeah.
in speculative fiction particularly, because sometimes I think you've got to be I want to say careful. Careful's not the right word. I think you need to know where that's going, and it should be supporting the main plot. And at some point, I suppose it could become the main plot. And that's fine as long as you sort of accounted for it. And I'm sort of thinking of the Throne of Glass series where it's all gone a bit peculiar.
Well, I think the whole kind of the romantic subplot thing, again, you really see it where the idea is that ultimately at the end of what you've planned, the two, you know, you've had this friction between two characters and they get together and then ta-da, you know, they're together. And then the series continues, and people don't know how to make it interesting with these characters together, so they then do everything in their power to separate them, to cause
Yeah.
divisions, to make them question, actually, should we be together, so that we as an audience are still going, but are they actually together, or they just kill them, which
Or
I
they,
think is pretty much what happens in Throne of Glass.
yeah, or they break them up, which is kind of what happened in Divergent briefly. And it's just sort of, well, maybe you shouldn't let them get together in book one if you wanted that to be a really major sort of part that sort of contributed towards the tension in the rest of the books.
Or maybe you need to find something else that can bring tension that isn't to do with that,
I
basically.
mean, certainly when they made the X-Files originally, they, even despite people really shipping Mulder and Scully, they said that they weren't going to have them get together
Yeah.
right up until, when they got together, that would be the end of it. And they had a good long run. And it worked because that was the constant, if you like. Their relationship was sort of, they relied on each other, they were friends and colleagues, and there might have been something there, but because they worked together as much as anything else, but it wasn't allowed to go any further until it
Yeah.
did, and that did pretty much end it, as they said.
Yeah.
And then when they remade, they made a new series quite recently, and they had them divorced because there was no way they could do a series where they're together and happy and still investigating the
But see, that's the thing. It kind of bugs me that that's what they have to do, is that you can't possibly have the I don't understand why. It's not a romance story, you know. That wasn't, it was part of the tension that they built, But it really frustrates me because it would just be so nice to see a different kind of dynamic where it's not actually like, no, in order to get this story to work, we need to have that tension only between these two characters. Like, there's different kinds of tensions you can build up that aren't to do with are they together, are they not together, do they still have feelings for each other kind of thing. There's different ways, and it's like none of these people have ever met have ever met a married happily married couple before or anything
Yeah,
like that.
or even let's not have them as potential like end game romantic partners in the first place. Let's just say they're going to have a really, really strong friendship. And a really, really strong friendship can rival a romantic partnership quite easily.
Yeah, it can. It absolutely can.
Or even two completely respectful enemies, as in they really don't like each other, they don't get on, their viewpoints are diametrically opposed almost. But at the same time, sometimes their goals align and they end up working together.
I think you're thinking of Crowley again.
Probably, probably. But maybe that's why Supernatural works in a way, because you can't have Sam and Dean getting together.
No, you can't have Sam and Dean getting together. Well,
Well, you
some people
could,
would
but it would really
argue
change the tone of the
that becomes a completely different show if Wincest wins, I believe that's what.
I don't want to know
Wincest.
if there is fanfic. I don't want
Of
to
course, there's fanfic.
know. I don't judge anyone, it's just I don't really want to read that one. I read a very, very disturbing one the other day where there was I don't think I should talk about it on air actually, so I won't. It was a coffee shop one that looked innocent and didn't end that way, and there was cream involved, and I won't go into any more detail than that.
Wait, was it Supernatural?
Yes, it was
Was it?
a Supernatural Merlin crossover.
What?
Yeah,
We are talking at the, about this at the end because
okay,
what?
right. And I think I should change the subject anyway. That's
Very
probably
good.
about all we've got time for today, anyway.
Yeah, I think that's all we've got time for.
On that note.
so on that note, so we've looked at cases where a series hasn't worked, or when it has worked and why it's worked, and cases where the follow-up book to a standalone didn't cut it, and times when actually it did, and when series need to stop and when standalones need to continue.
Yeah.
Because there are some standalones that really do need to continue, that
Yeah, almost.
deserve to
Yeah,
continue.
there are some that actually feel quite abruptly cut off, actually.
Again, like Firefly.
If you have it, any thoughts, comments, opinions, we'd love to hear from you. And also, we are trying to hit 2,000 downloads by Christmas. So please download us, follow us on Podbean or iTunes or Facebook. That would be great.
And introduce us to your friends. I mean,
Yes.
the series. Oh, you can also introduce us to your friends, but
No, definitely the series.
definitely series. And on that note, we'll say goodbye.
Thanks and bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.